I'm Dr. Stephanie Munt.
And I'm Dr. Ellie Summers.
And this is Two Women Running Their Mouths, a podcast for women who run by women who run. Our 80-20 rule, 80% dishing, 20% running.
Welcome back. I wanted to take a moment because we've been in this podcast for, it's been about a year now.
That's wild. We should have done a 1 year celebration.
I know.
Here it is.
I don't even know when we started. Maybe November of last year. I don't remember. We could look back. Anyway, we wanted to take a moment to thank you all for listening to our podcast. We know it's an amateur podcast, and we're very well aware of our limitations in podcasting. For example, last week, I sent the podcast off into the podcast land, and one of our friends, Natalie Johnson, I can't remember if it's with a T or just an S, she's also a run coach. She messaged me and was like, I think there's like more recording after the episode ends. There may be an editing issue. Yes, there was basically an extra 20 minutes of another episode still on the podcast. So, yeah, Steph, this is news to Steph. I just wanted to say thank you all for listening and for, being here with us, and we just really appreciate those of you who reach out to let us know that our podcast episodes have been helpful to you or they've been insightful to you. We're trying our best here to make it useful to our listeners. So if you have a moment today and you want to give us a review or, you know, share the podcast with someone you know, we really appreciate it. Anyway, I digress. Thank you so much.
Yes, I thank you for bringing that up. And I'm sorry about the editing issue. Let me know if you need
help. Well, Steph, you do not need to apologize for that because it was most definitely my fault because I edit the podcast.
I really am an amateur in this part, as you can all see. But yeah, I also want to thank everyone for, well, we do appreciate you. And thank you so much for listening and sharing. And really, if there's any topics that are near and dear to your heart that you'd love to hear about, or you know, even you want to come on, let us know.
Yes, actually, we have a guest coming up that we're really excited about. Who is a bone researcher, and I'm not going to say any names yet because we still need to get it scheduled and all that stuff, but be looking forward to that one.
I can't wait. It's going to be great.
Yes. Yes.
So today, I hope this doesn't come off as more of a rant or a beef.
Oh, but that's what it's about.
Tradition again.
Tradition.
So today I want to talk about experiences with demonizing normal pathologies, demonizing pain, and the frustrations in a world that doesn't really respect or stand up for the rehab process, and often advocates for more invasive treatments that aren't necessary.
Yeah.
So,
oh boy. Yeah. Oh boy.
Oof. So just to begin, I'll start with the first part. So I had an experience yesterday working with a patient with likely a labral tear or FAI. Doesn't want to get imaging at this point. I don't see a need for it. But had been told by another practitioner, probably should go see an ortho and get an injection because you're plateauing. And so came to see me for a second opinion, and had told a friend, you know, they think it's a labral tear. And the friend was like, oh my gosh, it's awful. When are you having surgery? What are you going to do? And just that alone, or even being told by your healthcare clinician, you should probably get an MRI and get an injection. That's demonizing these things that are pretty normal. And this mm-hmm. guy has low levels of pain right now, 2 to 3 out of 10 max. And to tell someone, you know, our words matter so much, to tell someone that, oh, you know, we can't do anything more, haven't really changed his exercise program in weeks, can't really do anything more. Here's the next step. Let me know when you want that injection. That is not helpful.
That's adding to the problem. Yes. This is the medical system in a nutshell when it comes to musculoskeletal issues and injuries. I mean, how do we broach this time?
Well, let's just go for it. Rip the Band-Aid off.
I mean, I think this experience is more common than it isn't. And it just is like this assumption that the only way to treat someone and get them better, or that the thing that they're looking for even, is invasive medical treatments, injection, surgery, yada, yada. And I think probably 9 times out of 10, people are hoping to avoid that type of thing. Sometimes people might be thinking that's their only option. That's fine. And it's incredibly frustrating because the people who do look to avoid it, they go to the provider, and then the provider scares the shit out of them.
Mm-hmm. 100%.
On something that you are describing is probably pretty okay and normal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And part of the time I wonder, you know, I think this information is very readily available, but that's my bias because I've created an environment where, you know, it is readily available. There's a lot of people I follow and research that I've done that's like counter or, you know, exploring. Maybe the answers we had 10 years ago aren't the answers that we need or are useful right now. So right. I, you know, sometimes think like, why are they doing this? Why are they giving people things that are like, people are evil. why aren't they setting up to PT? But, you know, it just seems like maybe that's not the case. Somehow people aren't aware that these things are normal. So if you aren't aware of that, let's talk about that. Labral tears are very common in asymptomatic populations. Mm-hmm. FAI is very common in asymptomatic populations, or femoroacetabular impingement. Those things in themselves do not necessarily mean someone will have pain or needs intervention, or definitely does not mean they need surgery.
Yeah. When Steph says this stuff, you know, basically we're also recognizing studies that have been done on people with no pain or pathology in high performing athletes as well. And they'll look at, you know, a group of high performing athletes and do an MRI on all of them, or yeah, whatever. And, you know, I think of one study in particular on the shoulder where they looked at volleyball players, and they imaged all these volleyball players who were playing at the highest level. And like 80% of them had a labral tear in their shoulder, mm-hmm. with no symptoms,
no symptoms.
And so as physical therapists, what we hear when we read stuff like that, and what we conceptualize, is that it's possible for people to function at a really high level and do really, really well with tissue issues. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, the majority of the population probably doesn't know that.
No.
Yeah. And so they go to the doctor, and the doctor themselves probably doesn't believe that. Mm-hmm. And is like, okay, the only way to treat this meniscus tear is with an injection. The only way to treat this is with a surgery. You've doomed that patient forever, in my opinion, mm-hmm. because now there's no way out of their darkness. The only way out in their mind at that point, because of power struggle, unfortunately, is sometimes the most invasive way. Mm-hmm. And then you don't even get me started. And then oftentimes it leads to problems afterwards.
Absolutely.
The pain doesn't go away when you have surgery. It turns out surgery is incredibly painful, mm-hmm. and the rehab after surgery incredibly painful a lot of the time, mm-hmm. depending on, you know, the musculoskeletal type of surgery.
Absolutely. Yeah. And from that standpoint, okay, like putting myself in their shoes, if they truly, you know, were taught, you know, in throughout their education, they truly were taught that this tissue has to be fixed only with injection or surgery, then yeah, it makes sense that they would think, okay, physical therapy is not going to help. But again, this information I think is so readily available now, especially for meniscus tears.
Mm-hmm. Meniscus tears. Let me just say this on another study. I'm just citing these random studies, and I do not know the authors. These are studies I remember reading or hearing about. So be cautious with my own very biased knowledge coming to the table here. In like Australia and New Zealand, I'm fairly confident that surgery for meniscus tear as a first line of attack is considered malpractice in those regions. That's how ridiculous surgery for meniscus tear is.
Take that in. Take it in.
Take it in.
Malpractice.
Malpractice. But in the United States, what's the first thing we go to for meniscus tear?
Surgery. Take it out. Surgery.
Take it out. Cut out the meniscus.
The problem. So, get rid of it.
Yeah. It's wild. It's wild.
It is so wild. And healthcare is expensive. And maybe that's part of why.
A musculoskeletal medicine for low back pain, if we just like go down that rabbit hole, humongous costs on our medical system and on people and human beings for low back pain that is often managed with aggressive measures. I mean, you know, you look at, I'm just going to like make stuff up here, but not really, like people who go in to a medical system for lower back pain, pretty much 100% of them are going to get imaging, mm-hmm. whether they need it or not. Mm-hmm. And it's a money thing.
100%.
Yeah.
More than likely that image is going to show something.
Yeah.
That we can, at that point, pin their pain on. And
freak out about.
Yeah. Yeah. But something that is probably more than likely unrelated.
Yeah.
And, or if it is related, doesn't need an instant correction. And spinal surgery is, oof. I don't know about you. I don't want anyone in there. That's terrifying. I know many people who have had a rough time with spine surgery. So yeah, I think trying to get more and more information out to other people and clients and just to the masses of these conditions are not necessarily one, causing your pain. Two, mm-hmm. no, they may, physical therapy isn't going to fix that tissue, but neither is surgery. And, you know, even a labral repair or a rotator cuff repair, it's not the same.
Mm-hmm.
And so many people do so well without those things.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's like
people to know that. I need to be like, put it on the guy at the sign guy, put it on his sign.
You don't need surgery for meniscus tear.
I told you I'm making memes now. That's kind of fun.
Yeah. I mean, I think as physical therapists too, you know, of course we're very biased because we work with people in pain who have diagnosed tissue issues and likely pursued non-invasive options and sometimes did pursue invasive options. And so we get to see both sides of the proverbial coin here. And ironically, people who typically don't choose surgery, they often do get better. Mm-hmm. Like when they come to a physical therapist, go figure, we're great at our jobs.
Yes. Yes. And unfortunately, with that said, sometimes people have poor experiences with physical therapy because it's not individualized or not, you know, sometimes we are the problem.
Oh, right? 100%. Surgeons don't refer to us.
Right. There was another study. Oh my gosh. I'm going to forget this name too. I think I can find it, but
we're just making up studies, y'all.
Yeah, it was my own study. Yeah. None of one. But really, how much our words contribute to low back pain? And this was specific to low back pain in certain populations, but in anything. So that was probably part of many of our education as well, of like, this can only be fixed this way, or, oh, you have to do this exercise for that. And so, yes, there are times where they've had bad experiences with physical therapy and we are contributing to that problem. For example, you know, the athlete I talked about earlier that I saw yesterday with the, who was, you know, basically every time he was in recently hinted at, let me know when you want that ortho info so you can get an injection. That's not helpful. That's not necessary. They're not doing adductor strength. They're not doing hip flexor strength, like big components, no single leg strength. There were just like big holes in this program, which by itself may not be an issue. I think more of the issue is the wording and oh, you're never going to get better. You should probably go see someone else. We've done all we can do when clearly that's not the case.
Yeah. That's the demonization piece.
Yes.
Like I often say, like, if I'm afraid, my patient's going to be afraid.
Totally.
Right. And I think that as clinicians, admittedly, we are kind of trained to be afraid. And so you come out of school and like everything is a red flag and like, you know, oh my gosh, what are we going to do about this? They need an MRI. And then you start to realize how absurd that is. You maybe read a little bit more. I think the study you're referring to, or at least the one that came immediately to my head, was the enduring impact of what clinicians say to patients with low back pain. It is one of my all-time favorite studies. It's a seminal piece. And within that study, they talk about how the things clinicians say to patients drastically can influence the outcome, right? So we're going to use an example from that study. I use it in almost every presentation I've done to clinicians. This woman is explaining her story. So it's a qualitative study. So keep in mind, it's not an RCT or anything like that. Qualitative study is basically like you're interviewing patients on their experience. She says, you know, basically, all I've ever been told to do by clinicians is to strengthen my core, and I have the weakest core they've ever seen. And she had an abortion because she didn't think that she was strong enough to carry a baby. This all stems from somebody just saying to a person, a human being, you're the weakest person I've ever seen in my life. Or even just, it might not even be that extreme. It might just be as simple as saying your core is really weak. And then what the person takes from that is they're a weak person, that they're not strong, that they can't handle these things, that they're broken, damaged, and fragile. And as clinicians, we have such an incredible privilege to be able to capture people who are scared and worried and honestly do not know what to do. You are essentially a last resort. They have no clue what's going on in their body. You have an opportunity to paint it as incredibly grim or shine maybe a little bit of light, not like in a toxic positivity kind of way, but in a like, here's just like a little glimmer of hope. I think we can do this. You can do this.
Oh,
that's my soapbox.
Well said. Well said. And I think it is important to point out that, yeah, we have a tendency as humans, I think, to go black or white, you know, like, yeah. Well, can't, if they are weaker on that side or they do have a weak core. I mean, one that's hard to measure, but
yeah. Are you standing? You have a strong core.
Right.
Are you like able to like sit yourself up on a chair? You have a strong core.
Right.
Like,
yeah. And with though the, just like you said, not toxic positivity, like you're perfect. You can do all right. These things right now, you know, but yeah, the glimmer of hope and just a plan and that really they're heard and they can heal rather than, oh man, you have a long ways to go. There's a lot to work on here.
Right.
I've heard that before.
Like what's the number one thing you want a clinician to hear about your situation, you know, like you want them to hear you. You want them to know your pain is real. You want them to validate your experience and to investigate things appropriately. And I think that so often that can't happen in our medical model when it comes to musculoskeletal pain, because there's not enough time for clinicians to sit down and really hear people. But physical therapists do have that time.
Mm-hmm. We do have more time. Yes.
So go to a PT.
Yes. Seek out a PT first. You know, if obviously there are exceptions.
Yes. I mean, like in my example, like the physios are basically like, yo, you're so weak. You're just
right.
A fragile piece of shit. That's not the type of clinician you want to look for.
Fragile piece of shit. That one, yeah, red flags.
But I think too,
Sorry.
No,
I was going to say.
You got me going here. Still.
I love it. I mean, that's what it comes down to. Who was I talking to the other day? Oh, yes. I have puppy problems right now. There's just so many background noises. Piper. Goodness. She needs
puppy problems. They're a puppy, not a problem, Stephanie.
That's true. Just puppy things. It was with someone I know very well. So I wasn't very like tactful about my strategy here, but was talking about something someone told them about their form in the gym. And told them to like, oh, you should stop doing that because you're those like I can tell like you should do this instead. Basically, that's not gonna help you. And I was like, well, did they ask? Like, are you going for hypertrophy or strength? Like, sure, maybe your calf muscles aren't gonna get bigger and who knows, but what if you're just going for strength? What if you're rehabbing from an Achilles issue? Like, no, actually just kind of came up and gave me advice. I was like, so ultimately, like, was that helpful at all? Like, actually, no.
Right.
Like, yeah. So when when you're given advice, I think from, like you said, the power struggle from someone who may have a different education or more education or in a different way, usually you take it and we don't think about it too much, but encourage you with your healthcare clinicians, whether that's physical therapists or anyone, coaches, trainers, like really evaluate, was that helpful for my purposes? Was that actually going for what I wanted answered? Or was that just kind of a piece of information or advice thrown in there that wasn't asked for and isn't necessary?
Yeah. And I think it's important to consider, is this information going to improve my performance? Or is it going to make me worry? Mm-hmm. And I think that when it comes to like medical providers, physical therapists, coaches, strength coaches, we like to think that we can predict the future. Mm-hmm. Like, oh my God, don't do it that way. You're gonna get hurt. Mm-hmm. Just do not predict the future. Again, like you do not know if that person is gonna get hurt or not with the way that they're showing up. Honestly, in the medical world, if they have a meniscus tear, I have a meniscus tear and I run and play soccer and do all the shit because I had a provider who was like, yeah, you probably have a meniscus tear, but it's going to heal up and you're going to be just fine. And I was like, great, here we go. Mm-hmm. That was a surgeon. How rare is that? He moved back to, I think he lives in New Zealand now.
Dang it, bring him back. Yeah,
there you go. Perfect example of a physician and surgeon who understood that meniscus tears are typically like rehabbable, very rehabbable.
100%.
Yeah.
I love that. Yeah. Is it going to improve my performance or improve the way I do things, or is it going to make me worry? And we have very limited predictive capacity in healthcare, as can be evidenced by continued high rates of everything. So
terribly predictive. We cannot predict with any degree of certainty injury risk.
No, if someone says, well, it may not bother you right now, but you just haven't been injured yet. Red flags.
Yeah.
Around.
Exactly. So that's what I mean. Like if I'm worried, they're worried. Mm-hmm. So as clinicians, we have a responsibility to not be worried, which involves an understanding that we don't need to demonize movement, tissue injuries, like things are healable. Our bodies, the number one thing our bodies are great at are healing tissues. Mm-hmm. Like how cool is that? You get a cut on your skin and it heals itself.
So crazy. Our bodies are amazing. Yeah.
You break your bone, it's gonna heal itself.
Yeah.
Pretty much every time.
Yeah, you don't have to do much.
Depending on the type of bone injury, of course. So we don't need to go down that
right,
road.
Right. Yeah. Most of the time.
Yes.
So yes. Let's demonize less and encourage more.
Yeah. Yeah. And if you're somebody who has dealt with clinicians who have not fostered a less worrisome state, you know, we're here. Mm-hmm. Maybe we can help. I don't know. Reach out. Yeah. I mean, I think that, and I don't know about you, Steph, but a good portion of my patient population now are people who have been to other clinicians and had not the success that they were hoping for.
Yeah. I would agree.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. Don't even get me started on clinicians demonizing things like alignment and
pelvic rotation, our pronation. Yeah, that's another one.
Yeah.
Which we talked about, I think, in gait training a little bit.
We did. We mentioned that a little bit. Yeah. So anyway, we have strong biases here, but we're pretty excited, positive, hopeful, smart people, I think. So if you're needing help and guidance, please reach out to us.
Absolutely. That's all we got for today. Thank you for listening.
Thank you.